Welcome to the Corlin Economics Report, a weekly look at financial and political topics relating to asset-based investing. Guests on this program pay no fees to appear, and guests and hosts disclose any equity interest in companies profiled. Now, the Corlin Economics Report.
Oh, welcome into the weekend edition of the KE Report. My name is Corey Fleck, and I am your host for the first hour. In this first hour, we're going to focus a lot on the moves in the broad markets, the major drivers behind these moves, and also a couple discussions on what's going on with the trade war and those meetings that are coming up next week. For all the resource investors, we will have some comments on the precious metals, but I covered so much of what was going on in the metals and certain stocks throughout the week that I just want to recommend everyone coming to our website or our podcast and listening to those segments that were put out throughout the week. I am kicking off the show with a guest that gets a lot of comments, and I got a lot of comments this week asking what he thought of these market moves and some of the other factors that we will talk about. I am chatting with Trader Vic Sparandio. Trader Vic, let's start it off with the general comments on the U.S. equity markets. It was a very volatile week just this week, and especially to kick off the October month. But if we go back to, let's say, September, when the markets made that recent high, it wasn't quite at all-time highs, and the move down from those highs have been pretty aggressive just, well, especially this week, but just in the last about 3 weeks now. Give us your broad perspective of what's at play here for the U.S. equity markets.
All right. Well, a key turning point was September 3rd and 4th, to a lesser degree, some items on the 5th. And it was announced, I watched the news in the morning early, and Bloomberg was the first to announce the trade talks. I mean, officially, Trump talks about this all the time. But they were first to officially announce that there would be a trade talks with China beginning in early October, or mid-October, I should say. So if you go back to that announcement and you look at the markets, that is a key turning point. Though the market ended near it traded down from the August highs to the August lows virtually at the end of the month, and then on the 3rd and 4th, basically rallied from there into the middle of September. And the key to this scenario is that the focus is very heavily on these trade talks. Now, let me just put this in perspective. The trade talks themselves, from a macro concept, is not as important to GDP, because again, if you put a 25% tax on all of China's goods and services, 550 billion of it, you know, you're talking about 1.5% of GDP. And that would be a tax, so that could be something for sure, but it's a relatively small number. What's important about it is the earnings to corporate America. That's why it's significant. So, because, if you raise prices on something, you're going to sell less of it, and corporate America benefits from this. So it is important just to keep that in context. But the key to these trade talks are really important to watch what happens next week. I have a guess, but I underline the word guess, and the guess is that China is going to offer some small things. They're really trying to delay this in hopes that Trump loses the next election. So they don't want to do anything big because they're hoping for change to negotiate with somebody they can get something from, like, you know, a new Democrat. But I think they're going to offer some things. The markets will have to judge. I'm not sure how. But I'm only saying I want to pound the table. That's the most important thing. The second most important thing, of course, is monetary policy. And after the bad news of this week, if you use the futures to discount what the Fed is going to do at their October 31st meeting, that's the day they make the judgment, it went from a 40% to 87%. They're going to lower rates another quarter, 40 to 87, because of this bad news on this manufacturing index that is now in the negative territory. So the trade talks also come into play here, because again, if you're a corporation and you're not sure what's going to happen, and this is logical, you stop capital spending and you stop building inventories, you're doing everything defensive, and that is logical, and that's shown up. So the economy is still in a slowdown, which I've been pounding the table on. It's more confirmed now. Unless you get these trade talks to be, let's say, solidified in some reasonable way, the economies of the world will all continue to slow down. Some will go in recession.
So, Trader Vic, just a quick comment then. We hear a lot from President Trump that the Fed needs to be cutting rates and that'll help support the economy. But from all the data that we saw this week and all the weak data, all the businesses and corporations are pointing to these trade uncertainties as the main reason why they're not investing. But you know what? In all fairness, a lot of corporations weren't really investing before these trade talks started. Which one is more so in the driver's seat? To me, it seems like at least monetary policy is a bit more reactive to what's going on. What are your thoughts, though? Which one is the major driver?
Exactly, Corey. It's the predominance of the focus is on these trade talks, and for the reasons I just outlined. GDP won't be heavily affected, but in other words, you're in the short run, you're not going to go into recession. But you get corporate profits that are gravely affected by if these taxes go up on products, people will stop buying those products. They'll buy other things, but they'll go to a restaurant. So, you know, McDonald's will do okay, let's say here, or maybe or some local place we eat and some restaurants. But they're not going to necessarily buy, you know, cotton shirts from China, if you know what I mean. So the bottom line is, it is the main focus of the markets. And I just pound the table on that. That's more important. The Fed is going to lower rates, although that's a curveball, and I'll get into that because that's important. The Fed is going to look like it's trying to do its part by lowering rates, but that's a false misdirection, because what the Fed has done, and they've curbed it a little bit here. But what the Fed has done is reduce their balance sheet. Now, this number I'm going to tell you, I must have spent about 8 days researching. So this is a lot of time to confirm this. But the Fed's balance sheet, since the week that Donald Trump was elected to the end of last week, has declined, the Fed balance sheet, 5.75%, compounded. For that 2 years and 10 months. M2, and Milton Friedman is on the phone here, M2 grew at 4.5%. Now, let me put that in perspective for you, because very rarely do you ever hear people talk about money supply. Of course, I grew up in the 70s, you know, in essence trading, when inflation was heavily driven by factors that are never talked about today. Money supply for 12 years, from 1970 to 1982, grew at 9.6% compounded. It is now growing at 4.5%. Now, under Obama, it grew in the high sixes. So if you have a growth in money supply of 4.5%, you're going to go in recession. That's unquestioned. It's just that there's a lag to that number, and the lag can be a year. So you got the stimulus from taxes, from the tax cuts, and from lower regulation and all the things Trump did that you know about. The point is, what was happening behind the scenes is the Fed, like most other agencies, they were really, now this is a cynical view, they were sabotaging this growth. They didn't want strong growth. So they decided to decrease their balance sheet from $4.5 trillion to $3.7 trillion over this period of 2 years and 10 months. And meanwhile, the ECB and Japanese Central Bank increased their money supply, their balance sheet, and they're both over $5 trillion, and China's probably close to $6 trillion. So we're the only duck out of water here that's not really keeping the economies going. Because we've gotten those tax cuts that people can't spend money if they don't have money. So helping by giving you back part of what you earn is why our economy is doing very well relative to the rest of the world. There is no tax cuts in the rest of the world. It's all trying to, keep lower rates so that you borrow, but people are not borrowing because you got negative rates in Europe and they still have negative rates. So it's more defensive. So getting back to square one, the fact that the money supply is growing at substandard amounts. Now, in the last week and a half, because of this repo problem, it's grown at 2.6% in a week, in a month, I'm sorry. But, that could end. The key is the Fed does not tell you it's going to start to increase its balance sheet. And if you don't have that, if you studied anything what Milton Friedman has so brilliantly have written, you're not going to get growth if you don't get growth in the money supply. It's never been this small, meaning M2 at 4.5% for 2.5 years has never happened since the 50s. I mean, it didn't happen in the 50s either. I came from post-war. It's just never been this low. So you can imagine you're going to continue to slow down. And that ISM number is no surprise.
Hey, that does all make sense. There is also another aspect of monetary policy that I do want to touch on. In a way, it kind of relates to monetary growth, but not quite. That deals with the repo market and the Fed having to step in multiple times over the last 2 weeks just to free up some available cash for that repo market. I've talked a fair bit about it in the last couple of weeks, but I want to get your thoughts on what that action means in the bigger picture.
Okay, well, it comes from the fact that there's not enough cash in the system because the Fed has reduced their balance sheet so much. It also comes from the fact that in 2014, late in the year, October, the banks changed the rules on how they mark to market their debt securities, their U.S. government debt. And they changed it to, they used to have an account called available for sale. So if you're a bank, you buy a bond and you have it in this account called available for sale. However, if bonds go down in price, you are marked to market. So you lose, and you could lose big. So the banks didn't this is a rigged system, right? So they changed the rules and added what's called a HTM account, hold to maturity. So they have a hold-to-maturity account, whereas if they buy a government bond now, they put it in that account, it doesn't get marked. So this is an arbitrage concept because they don't put up any money, they don't put up any reserves, they're exempt from Basel III because it's a sovereign debt, and they print the money to buy the security, so they can buy all the debt you want. That's why debt doesn't matter. If the government wants to sell $1 trillion tomorrow of U.S. government debt, it'll get bought because they just print the money and buy it, and then it goes into this account, and there's no mark to market. They lose nothing. It's a pure arbitrage of whatever coupon they get. So now, why is that important? Well, it's called a hold-to-maturity account, meaning you can't sell it. A repo is not a loan. I mean, the word is used loans a lot. It's an actual sale, and then there's a repurchase of what you've sold at some time in the future. Usually it's a day, it could be a week, it could be 3 months, but it's usually short term. But the key is it's a sale. So if you're buying things in these hold-to-maturity accounts to avoid the marks, well, then you can't sell them. So there's a shortage of cash because they can't sell the securities to provide cash because they're in this ARB method. So this is what's called collateral damage. You know, everything has a reaction and an action. So if the Fed wants to help the banks, they can do that. They provide them with the ability for them to buy all the securities they want, no risk. But again, now the amount of money in the system is not the same thing because they can't use it. You see my point?
Yeah, no, I definitely do. And that's kind of some of the nuances within that repo market and also the way that these banks and other major investment funds are designating these investments, which is crucial to understand. Trader Vic, great chatting with you. Some very interesting comments on kind of the nuances within the market and also some very important details on what has been happening with the money supply in the U.S. just in the last few years. Trader Vic, great having you on the show. Have a great rest of your weekend.
Okay, you too. Thanks, Corlin.
Al Corlin's firm, A.B. Corlin & Associates Incorporated, provides consulting services to public companies on matters of regulatory compliance. To find out more, follow the link from www.kereport.com. The Corlin Economics Report will be back after this brief timeout.